Ladies and gentlemen, recording from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to another edition of the one and only podcast known to the world as Sean's Sports Stop, where Sean Teplitsky gives his unique opinion on the biggest news stories in sports.
That is right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Stop podcast, where your boy gives his opinion. First of all, reports the biggest news in sports, everything going on. And I'll be honest, at the present moment, there is a lot going on. But on top of that, I give my unique, captivating opinion on everything going on. And you know what? I'm not even gonna bombard you guys with some kind of nonsense beforehand. We're just going to get right into it, starting with some college football. Jackson State head coach and NFL Hall of Famer Deion Sanders has responded to Alabama head coach Nick Saban, saying that the school had Travis Hunter, the number one ranked recruit in the 2022 class, $1 million to help for him to play for the Tigers. Sanders told Jean-Jacques Taylor of Antscape, quote, "I haven't talked to Coach Saban. I'm sure he's tried to call. We need to talk publicly, not privately. What you said was public. That doesn't require a conversation. Let's talk publicly and let everybody hear the conversation. You can't do that publicly and call privately. No, no, no. I still love him. I admire him. I respect him. He's the magna cum laude of college football, and that's what it's going to be because he's earned that." Sanders' comments come after Hunter himself denied getting paid $1 million to play for Jackson State in a social media post on Thursday morning, tweeting, quote, "I got a mill? Question mark, crying laughing emoji, but my mom's still staying in a three-bedroom house with five kids," with another one of those aforementioned crying laughing emojis. Sanders also tweeted that Saban's comments were not true, saying, quote, "You best believe I will address that lie Coach Saban told tomorrow. I was and awakened by my son Shadur Sanders that sent me the article stating that we paid Travis Hunter $1 million to play at JSU. We as a people don't have to pay our people to play with our people." That is a very powerful message by Deion Sanders. Honestly, despicable behavior by Nick Saban if he is knowingly distributing this kind of false information that not only is it false information, but it paints multiple people in a bad light, obviously unjustly. If this is not true, we do not know if this is true or not. It is also possible that Nick Saban believed it to be true, going off of somebody's knowledge or info that he trusts. That might be wrong. He might be just kind of sending out info that he was told. And then Deion Sanders responded to Travis Hunter saying, "I don't even make $1 million, LOL. That's very funny. So to me, it's unlikely that Jackson State paid Travis Hunter $1 million to play for their school, especially when, as Deion Sanders said, he's not even getting paid $1 million to coach the team. Saban turned heads on Wednesday night after saying Texas A&M, which had the top-ranked recruiting class last year, quote, "bought every player on their team," while also speaking about how NIL is impacting the college football landscape. The 70-year-old also made a comment about the Tigers landing Hunter, who was originally committed to Florida State before flipping his commitment to Jackson State in December 2021, saying, quote, "Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to school," Saban said Wednesday per Brett Greenberg of the Tuscaloosa News. "It was in the paper. They bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it." There were rumors circulating at the time that Hunter committed to Jackson State that Barstool Sports offered him $1 million to play for the Tigers, per Sports Illustrated. The speculation arose because Barstool Sports is associated with Sanders through his 21st and Prime podcast. Sanders denied the rumor during an appearance on ESPN's Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max in December, saying that they did not pay Hunter to play for Jackson State, saying, quote, "We didn't pay. We ain't got no money. We ain't got no money. $1.5 million? I heard $1.5 million, and I heard Dave Portnoy over at Barstool. That's the biggest lie I've ever heard." It's possible that Saban only made his comments because a number of schools, such as Texas A&M, are landing top-ranked recruits due to NIL deals, and the changing landscape could make it more difficult for Alabama, who have previously landed the best players in the nation due to their amazing football program and incredible success football-wise. it could be more difficult now for Alabama, but these comments by Nick Saban are just downright stupid, in my opinion. It just makes no sense. More college sports. Trace Jackson Davis announced Friday that he is withdrawing from the 2022 NBA draft and returning to Indiana University for his senior season. He made it official with a video on Twitter. Jackson Davis has been a dominant force for much of his three-year collegiate career with the Hoosiers, both as a scorer and a rebounder. After averaging 13.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, and almost 2 blocks per game as a freshman, he took the next step during his sophomore season, racking up over 19 points, 9 rebounds, and 1.5 blocks per game. While his scoring and rebounding were down a bit last season to the tune of 18 points and 8 rebounds per game, Jackson Davis became a more well-rounded player, setting new career high averages of 2.3 blocks and almost 2 assists while shooting a career-high 59% from the floor. The 6'9 big man also played a big role in getting Indiana back to the NCAA tournament last season for the first time since 2016. With him back in the fold for the 2022-23 season, the Hoosiers have a chance to build on what they did last season in head coach Mike Woodson's first year, and they could possibly be contenders for a Big Ten championship. Who knows? They might be. Transitioning to, I guess you would call this basketball/politics. WNBA star Brittany Griner was visited Thursday by a consular official for the second time in a week, the State Department said Friday, according to ESPN. Griner, who has been detained in Russia since February, is, quote, continuing to do as well as could be expected under these exceedingly challenging circumstances, State Department Representative Ned Price said in a briefing. But again, our message is a clear and simple one. We continue to insist that Russia allow consistent and timely consular access to all U.S. citizen detainees. One-off visits are not sufficient, and we will continue to call on Moscow to uphold its commitments under the Vienna Convention for consistent and timely access as well. ESPN reports that Griner has been visited by her lawyers at least once a week while detained. The 31-year-old appeared in court earlier this month and had her pretrial detention extended into June, per the Associated Press. Russian officials detained Griner in February at a Moscow airport after they allegedly found vape cartridges containing cannabis oil in her luggage. It happened just before the Russian invasion of Ukraine began, which is very unfortunately still ongoing. Героям слава, слава Україні. But U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in March that the United States would provide assistance to any citizen being detained in Russia and that U.S. officials are, quote, doing everything we can to protect the rights of those detained. The Biden administration has since reclassified Griner as being, quote, wrongfully detained, meaning it is not waiting for her case to play out in the Russian legal system and will instead negotiate her release. Griner is one of a number of WNBA players who play overseas during the offseason. She last played for Russia's UMMC Yekaterinburg in January. The Phoenix Mercury selected Griner first overall in the 2013 WNBA draft, and she has gone on to have a successful career, averaging 18 points, 8 rebounds, and 2 assists in 254 games across 9 seasons in the WNBA. She actually gets paid 4 times as much to play for the Russian team during the WNBA offseason than she does for the WNBA's Phoenix Mercury. But I'm pretty sure I talked about the situation. Hopefully the U.S. is able to negotiate some kind of... release. But yeah, let's switch gears to some actual NBA basketball. The Miami Heat suffered a blowout loss at the hands of the Boston Celtics on their home floor in Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals on Thursday. After the game, Heat forward Jimmy Butler was blunt in his assessment, saying, quote, "They tried to embarrass us. They did embarrass us. Overall, we just have to be better." The Heat trailed by as many as 34 points in Thursday's 127-102 blowout loss. Butler led Miami with 29 points, but no other player had more than 14 points. As the leader of the team, Butler was unhappy with himself for not getting his teammates more involved, but he expressed optimism that he'll turn things around, saying, quote, "I promise you, I will figure it out." While Butler is shouldering the responsibility is admirable, it's going to take a collective effort from the Heat later today if they are able to erase their issues from Game 2. They allowed Boston to shoot 51.2% from the floor, and they connected on 20 out of 43 pointers. That is way too high. They got huge performances from their stars, as Jason Tatum had 27 points, while Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart had 24 apiece. Smart, who missed game one with a midfoot sprain, proved to be the spark that Boston needed and even more, as he also finished with 12 assists, 9 rebounds, 3 steals on a block. So big statement win by the Celtics in game two. And I'm very much looking forward to game three later today. Switching gears back to the NFL. New England Patriots players have reportedly started to question the direction of the team's offensive coaching staff following the departure of longtime offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels, who left to become the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Greg Bedrard of the Boston Sports Journal reported Wednesday on his podcast that he is hearing concerns ahead of the 2022 NFL season, saying, quote, "I've heard from people in the last couple days about what's going on with the offensive coaching staff, and the initial reports I'm getting back are not good at all, and that includes what they're hearing from the players internally. It's not going in a good direction." New England head coach Bill Belichick has not identified a coordinator replacement for McDaniels, or if that role will even remain vacant. The Patriots coaches include former New York Giants head coach Joe Judge, former Detroit Lions head coach Matt Patricia, and longtime Patriots wide receiver Troy Brown, who retired in 2007 and joined the staff in 2020, among some others. Henry McKenna of Patriots Wire reported last week the team may even hold a play-calling competition throughout training camp with Judge and Patricia as the early favorites. The players have also remained coy about the direction of the offense, as illustrated in comments from dual threat playmaker Ty Montgomery, who signed with the Patriots in March, saying, quote, "I consider myself an employee of the New England Patriots, and whatever they ask me is what I'm going to do." Belichick has never been forthcoming with information, but it seems his latest effort to keep opponents guessing has also left his own players feeling uncertain and possibly guessing as well. That's not ideal, as the Patriots attempt to put quarterback Mac Jones in a position to take a step forward in his second NFL season. He was solid as a rookie, completing 67.6% of his passes for 3,800 yards while playing all 17 games, but he has room for improvement after he tossed only 22 touchdowns. It may be a few more months before fans get an idea of just how the Patriots will look, specifically their offense, in the 2022 season. With that, we are going to switch gears to some basketball. The Los Angeles Lakers, after firing Frank Vogel, are doing, or at least trying to do, their due diligence when it comes to the hiring of the next head coach. It appears that Milwaukee Bucks assistant Darvin Ham might be the front runner for the Los Angeles Lakers head coaching job. Ham has made the, quote, "strongest impression among the finalists for the Lakers job," according to The Athletic. Quote, "In terms of the Lakers' preferences, sources say team officials have prioritized a coach who can command respect and authority from the locker room and who has a strong enough presence and voice to manage the varying roles and relationships across the roster. Those characteristics bode well for Ham's candidacy." The other finalists include Golden State Warriors assistant Kenny Atkinson and former Portland Trailblazers head coach Terry Stotts. The Athletic adds that Ham has been known throughout his coaching career for his, quote, "no-nonsense style and ability to resonate with his players." It's not necessarily surprising that the Lakers are looking for a coach with these attributes. I mean, Los Angeles alone is an incredibly difficult place to coach based on the spotlight alone, especially the Lakers. You know, the Clippers not as much. In addition, the team's next head coach will be leading a group that includes 37-year-old LeBron James and one that has questions about Russell Westbrook's fit with the team following a very disappointing 2021-22 season. That said, Ham knows all about coaching in difficult situations, having served as an assistant for the Lakers from 2011 through 2013. He has also served as an assistant for the Atlanta Hawks and has been with the reigning champion Bucks since 2018. In Milwaukee, Ham has coached some of the biggest stars in the NBA, including Giannis Antetokounmpo. That experience should help him in coaching players like LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, and Anthony Davis. In addition, Ham is the only candidate who has played in the NBA, so he understands the challenges that players deal with, and that experience would be huge for a team that definitely had their issues last year. The Lakers' head coaching job will be specifically challenging, as the team has little cap space to make improvements from the 2021-22 season. The Lakers finished 11th in the Western Conference, unfortunately, to a record of 33-49, as they struggled to build chemistry for pretty much the entire year. I think a huge thing for the Lakers will just be the fact that there will more than likely be less injuries this upcoming year than there were last year. I mean, hopefully, otherwise it'll probably be terrible again. But with that, I am going to transition to some more NBA. Some more basketball, baby. The NBA announced on Friday the members of the 2021-22 All-Defensive Teams with some familiar faces and this season's Defensive Player of the Year headlining the first team. So it's Celtics guard Marcus Smart, Grizzlies forward Jaren Jackson Jr., Jazz center Rudy Gobert, Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Suns forward Mikal Bridges. That is your NBA All-Defensive First Team. Much deserved. I agree with this list pretty much across the board. Meanwhile, Miami Heat big man Bam Adebayo, Warriors vet Draymond Green, Bucks guard Jrue Holiday, Sixers guard Matisse Thybul, and Celtics center Robert Williams III make up the second team. I like this team a lot as well. It's deserved. I mean, Marcus Smart's selection to the first team comes as no surprise as he was named a Defensive Player of the Year for the first time in his career. This also marks his third selection to an All-Defensive Team. The 28-year-old was one of the driving forces behind the Celtics' number one ranked defense this season. He ranked 7th in the league with 1.7 steals per game, tied for 6th in total steals with 119, and had 19 games with at least 3 steals. He also finished tied for 4th with 75 loose balls recovered, tied for 10th with 206 deflections and 16 charges drawn. In addition to that, he finished with 3.2 defensive rebounds per game, the most of his career. Jackson Jr., meanwhile, helped the Grizzlies finish with the 6th best defensive rating in the NBA and the 2nd best record in the Western Conference. This marks the first all-defensive team selection of his career. The 22-year-old finished the season averaging 4.3 defensive rebounds per game and a career-high 2.3 blocks per game. In addition, he finished with 769 contested shots, 63 loose balls recovered, 335 total defensive rebounds, 177 total blocks, and 73 steals. So a monster defensive season for Jaren Jackson Jr. Gobert, obviously, is a 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, and this marks his 6th all-defensive team selection. He helped the Jazz finish with the 10th best defensive rating in the league and was a big reason why Utah finished 5th in the Western Conference standings. The 29-year-old averaged 11 defensive boards and over 2 blocks per game. Antetokounmpo won DPOY in 2019-20. Bridges. So this has been a very impressive NBA season for a lot of players, in my opinion. I mean, players this year have been playing at such a high level, in my opinion. I mean, if you look at, I've said this several times now, but if you look at Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, and Nikola Jokic, all three of them, in my opinion, had a strong case to win the MVP. And, you know, I think if the other two didn't exist, then whoever you spotlight would have, you know, undisputedly won the MVP this year. But unfortunately, they all had unbelievable, godlike MVP caliber seasons carrying their teams all at the same time. So, you know, you can't have a 3-way tie for the MVP, maybe a 2-way tie at most. So, but one person had to win and it was Jokic. So my point is that that kind of level of play has translated to the defensive side as well. I mean, Marcus Smart had an unbelievable year defensively, obviously, but everyone else along there with him is really great. I mean, the NBA is really in a great spot. Speaking of great spots, that is not the Baltimore Orioles, but at long last, the Orioles have called up prize-catching prospect Adley Rutschman to the big leagues. The O's announced the move Saturday ahead of a home game against the American League East rival Tampa Bay Rays. MLB.com ranks Rutschman as the number one overall prospect in baseball, and he's now set to make his major league debut 3 years after the Orioles selected him with the number one overall pick in the 2019 draft. The 24-year-old Rutschman started collegially at Oregon State before getting drafted by the Orioles and has continued to perform at a high level during his minor league career. In 19 games this season across 3 different levels, he's slashing .309, .427, .515 with 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, and 12 runs scored. His 2022 season got off to a late start since he suffered a strained right tricep during a minor league intra-squad game in March per ESPN. The slugging backstop has since demonstrated that he's healthy, however, paving the way for his big league debut. His development was perhaps delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic, forcing the cancellation of the 2020 minor league season, but he showed what he could do over the course of a full season in 2021. Splitting 123 games between AA and AAA, Rutschman slashed .285, .397, .502 with 23 home runs, 75 RBIs, and 86 runs scored. His arrival comes at an, I would say, ideal time for the Orioles. It's a team that has struggled mightily at the plate this season, especially at the catcher position. Through 40 games, the Orioles ranked 23rd in team batting average at .228, 25th in runs scored with 139, and 22nd in home runs with only 31, leaving them last in the American League East with a 16-24 record. Robinson Chirinos and Anthony Benboom have been Baltimore's catchers this season, and it has not been pretty by any means from an offensive perspective. Chirinos is hitting 139 with one home run and six RBIs, while Benboom is hitting even worse at 115 with one home run and one RBI. So his only RBI was his home run this year. To make room for Rutschman, the Orioles designated Benboom for assignment, rightfully so. Rutschman should instantly be a fixture in the middle of the Orioles' lineup. He will also give Orioles fans a reason to actually come to the games, you know, in a dark time for their franchise. That's unfortunate for them, but yeah, I mean, the Orioles, hopefully in several years they'll actually be good. But now we will talk about soccer. I mean, this might be the biggest sports news of the day. Kylian Mbappe, despite heavy speculation of a move to Real Madrid, PSG announced on Saturday that superstar forward Kylian Mbappe is sticking with the club and not leaving anywhere. He is not going to Real Madrid. He is staying in Paris for the foreseeable future. According to football journalists, the deal runs through 2025. There was a video posted by PSG that confirms this. Nasser Al-Khelaifi said, "I'm proud to give you a beautiful news. Kylian Mbappe has signed until June 2025 with PSG." Gianluca DiMarzio of Sky Sports first reported Saturday that Mbappe had agreed to renew his contract with PSG. Romano later confirmed a report noting that Mbappe will stay at PSG after informing Real Madrid president Florentino Perez of his decision. Per the New York Times, Mbappe received offers exceeding $200 million from both PSG and Real Madrid. The development comes just 4 days after ESPN's Julian Lorenz reported that PSG had, quote, given up on retaining Mbappe and expected him to announce a move to Real Madrid imminently. Lorenz also reported at the time that PSG had made Mbappe a huge offer to stay, including a new contract, promises of a better squad for next season, the captaincy, and 100% of his own image rights. It was noted that PSG was confident in Mbappe remaining with the club last week, only for the tie to seemingly shift in Madrid's favor. Another twist occurred on Friday, though, with ESPN's Alex Kirkland reporting there was, quote, nervousness and confusion within Real Madrid regarding the club's chances of landing Mbappe. The report suggested there was, quote, pessimism over Mbappe making the move, although PSG was reportedly equally uncertain about whether he would stay. Mbappe's mother, Faiza Almari, told Cora Plus on Friday that PSG and Real had made Mbappe almost identical contract offers. She said Mbappe had agreed to both offers but had not yet decided on his future. The 23-year-old French national is widely viewed as one of the best players in the world, if not the best soccer player in the world. He has been named Ligue 1's best player 3 years running and has led the league in goals 3 times. He has also led PSG to 4 Ligue 1 titles, as well as a second-place finish in the 2019-20 UEFA Champions League. He has also scored 30 or more goals across all competitions for PSG in each of the past 4 seasons, including 36 so far this season. He's performed at a superstar level on the international stage as well, earning the Best Young Player Award at the 2018 World Cup, en route to helping France win the World Cup in 2018. With Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, 34 and 37 years old respectively, Mbappe looks to be the player who will dominate soccer for years to come, and he's looking the part so far. He is unbelievable. He is a joy to watch, and I'm personally very glad that he's staying in PSG, staying in Paris, and not going to Real Madrid. Transitioning back to the NBA, Miami Heat head coach Eric Spoelstra said Saturday that both Kyle Lowry and PJ Tucker are planning to play in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Boston Celtics. Spoelstra noted that both players will go through their pregame routines with the intent of playing Saturday. Lowry has not played since Game 4 of Miami's second round playoff series against the Philadelphia 76ers because of a hamstring ailment, while Tucker suffered a knee injury in Miami's 25-point Game 2 loss to the Celtics on Thursday. The Eastern Conference Finals are tied at 1 game apiece, with the Heat taking Game 1 and the Celtics answering in Game 2, but the scale could tip in Miami's favor if Lowry can return and play at a high level in Game 3. He's going to be the X factor, no doubt about it. He's 36 years old in the midst of his first season with the Heat, and while he has been productive when healthy, durability has been an issue. In addition to missing time during the playoffs, he was limited to 63 games this season, averaging 13.5 points, 7.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds, and almost 2.5 threes made per game, and over 1 steal while shooting 44% from the floor and 38% from a three. Before signing with the Heat in free agency, Lowry spent 9 seasons with the Toronto Raptors, where he earned 6 All-Star selections. He was the heart and soul player in Toronto, and he helped lead the Raptors to their first and only NBA championship alongside... in 2019. The 37-year-old Tucker also knows a thing or two about high-leverage playoff situations, as he was a key role player on the Milwaukee Bucks championship-winning team last season. Miami signed Tucker in free agency during the offseason in hopes that he could perform at a high level in the playoffs once again, and the move has paid dividends thus far. In 13 playoff games for the Heat, all of which are starts, Tucker is averaging 8 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2 assists, and almost 1.5 threes made, while shooting a very efficient 53% from the floor and 49% from 3, the corner specialist PJ Tucker. There were some questions regarding his readiness for Game 3 when he left Game 2 against Boston, but Spoelstra's comments are promising in relation to Tucker's health. If Lowry and Tucker both play Saturday, the Heat will essentially have a full allotment of weapons with Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, and Victor Oladipo all in line to play as well. The Heat arguably have the deepest team in the NBA, and they will need to show it in Game 3. And the rest of the way. Now switching gears to golf. I know I don't talk about golf often, but I'm going to do so right now. A day after Tiger Woods gritted his teeth and fought his way to a 1-under 69 to make the cut at the 2022 PGA Championship, his body failed him. Woods shot a 9-over score of 79 in Saturday's third round, one of his worst ever scores in a major championship. The 15-time major winner carded 7 bogeys against just 1 birdie and put up an ugly 6 on the par 3 sixth that served as the end of his tournament. Social media was buzzing with concern as Woods clearly struggled to physically make his way through the round. Paige Spiernak tweeted, quote, "It's hard watching Tiger be in so much pain. The fight he has to get through this round is incredible." All respect to Tiger Woods. He's an absolute legend. He's playing in his second tournament since coming back from a February 2021 car crash that nearly led to the amputation of his right leg. So the fact that he's even playing is unbelievable. Tiger Woods is so good. I mean, he's beyond, you know, Michael Jordan level in the golf world. Both tournaments have followed a similar script, featuring solid enough Thursdays and Fridays before his body failed him over the weekend. At the Masters, Woods managed to stay afloat well enough to finish in 47th place. At the PGA, Woods is currently in a tie for 76th. Sepp Straka is the only player who made the cut who has a lower overall score. It's been both admirable and difficult to watch Tiger Woods try to tough it out and compete at the highest level while still clearly moving in a diminished state. His pure determination is what made him arguably the greatest athlete of this generation. That said, it's clear that Tiger Woods is going to see this through and push his body to the brink for better or worse, and that deserves massive respect. Switching gears to baseball. Back to baseball. Chicago White Sox manager Tony La Russa said that New York Yankees designated hitter Josh Donaldson directed a racist comment toward White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson. Following his team's 7-5 defeat Saturday, La Russa told reporters that Donaldson, quote, made a racist comment. He declined to provide any further details, saying the allegation, quote, is as strong as it gets. Anderson said that Donaldson called him, quote, Jackie, referring to baseball legend Jackie Robinson. He added he concurred with La Russa's description of the mark as, quote, racist. Donaldson confirmed the allegation and said he was referencing a remark that Anderson made in 2019. In an interview with Sports Illustrated Stephanie Apstein, Anderson said, quote, I kind of feel like today's Jackie Robinson, referencing his individual flair, which is largely frowned upon in the MLB. A flair, I might add, that is largely shared by Josh Donaldson. Donaldson told reporters he had joked with Anderson about the remarks when he played with Atlanta in 2019 and his team faced the Chicago White Sox. The 2015 American League MVP said he was not, quote, trying to be racist and apologize. So this was handled perfectly by Josh Donaldson. This makes Tim Anderson seem like the softest player in baseball. I mean, it's just kind of funny contextually. But once again, this was handled perfectly by Josh Donaldson, where he stood his ground and explained and admitted to what he was accused of, explained why he did that, but then also apologized and said that he had no ill intentions and he did not want to be racist in any way. So perfectly handled by Josh Donaldson, and he felt that the self-reference had been a joke between the two of them in the past. So clearly today, that energy was not matched by Tim Anderson for whatever reason. It might be because the White Sox lost 7-5 to the Yankees. It might not be because of that. According to Kirstie Acker of the New York Daily News, MLB is already looking into the matter. So Donaldson will probably get fined or suspended. I mean, you know how this stuff works. In the bottom of the fifth inning, as Donaldson was preparing to bat, White Sox catcher Yasmani Grandal began talking to Donaldson and appeared to point toward Anderson at short. The bench is cleared, and Anderson was held back and brought to the dugout by teammates Jose Abreu and Gavin Sheets. In the Yankees' 10-4 victory over the White Sox on May 13th, Anderson took exception to Donaldson's actions during a tag play at third. Jackie Robinson, if you somehow don't know, became the MLB's first black player in 1947, opening the door for his peers and future generations of black players. Quote, "It's the guy that paved the way for a guy like me," Anderson told MLB.com's Scott Merkin of the Hall of Famer in April during the league's annual celebration of Robinson's legacy. "Just what he brought to the game. He means so much to the game. He means so much to the world. He means so much to the community. This has been going on since before I was born, so it's super special." I definitely understand and respect Tim Anderson and Jackie Robinson, but this was kind of ridiculous on the part of Tim Anderson, in my opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been over 30 minutes. I love you guys so much. I really appreciate you guys listening. And Colorado Avalanche, St. Louis Blues later today. I got the Avalanche. I got the Heat as well. With that said, if you're still listening, follow me on Instagram at Sean Hard, the Lenny's Picks. And with that, I'm out.